All lines are now bridged.
And we're really excited to have everyone back with us today. We have a lot to cover, and we do have some special guests with us today that we'll introduce shortly. But we're going to get started with roll call. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. I'll start with our co-chair, Jill Shoemaker.
Good morning, everyone.
Raj Watwani, our other co-chair, won't be able to join us, but he will be back with us next time. Zahi Butt. Jim Gerges. Bryant Karras.
Good morning. I'm here.
Joseph Kunich. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Ken Mandel. Abby Sears.
Present.
Sasha Terma. Thank you, Abby. Sasha Terma will be joining us later. Cheryl Turney.
I'm here. Good morning.
And Stephen Waldron.
Here.
Great. Thank you so much. And I'll turn it over to Jill to get us started. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mike, and welcome, everyone. And thank you for joining us on a Wednesday and making that little adjustment this week. We've got a lot of slides to cover, so we're just going to jump right in. Next slide, please. So what we're going to be doing today is we're going to review the agreed upon recommendation. So from the Google Doc, Raj and I pulled over all of those pieces that we have agreed on for each of the measures, and we've placed them, or the urban team has helped us place them into the slides. So we're going to review those today. And then there are some outstanding pieces around the public health information exchange measures. We have a guest speaker that will be presenting today, and if we have time, we'll talk about those pieces that we had targeted that would be recommendations for further discussion. Then we'll go to our public comment and final remarks, and then we will adjourn. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Great, thank you. So this is just an outline of what our slides will look like or be involved for when we send them to the HITECH group. The introductory slides will contain all of those pieces that we just skipped over, our charge, our roster, and our process overview, and then we'll go into the high-level summary of measures that we reviewed, and then the next section will be the recommendations in our summary. So that's the piece of the slide deck that we're going to cover today. Next slide, please. So to begin with, this is a high level. So if you remember, as we were reviewing each of the measures, we began to see that there were redundant messages that were going across all of the measures, and we decided to pull all of those out instead of repeating them with each measure into part of the slide deck that would say, this is our recommendation for kind of cross-cutting across all measures. So I'm going to give you a moment. I'm just going to pause. I'm not going to read each of these slides as we go through, but I want you just to review them. And if you have any comments, you know, please raise your hand and comment on them. Otherwise, we're just going to keep going through the slide deck. So these, again, are just cross-cutting recommendations.
We also had some recommendations about provider and counter definitions. I don't know if you wanted to capture those here or not.
There's another slide. This is actually two slides. There you go. So I think that's what we captured on this slide. Is that what you were asking about?
Yeah, just providing some more detailed definitions.
Yeah. Okay. Any comments about the cross-cutting recommendations? All right, next slide. Go ahead.
I'm not a coding deep expert, but I know C++ outpatient encounters are also coded in CPT and not exclusively in SNOMED.
Yeah, this is Steve Waldron. The parentheticals should be switched.
Okay, so Steve, you're saying that the SNOMED should be inpatient and the CPT should be outpatient. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Okay, we'll make a note of that. Thanks for catching that.
Not. Depends on what message type.
No, this is encounters. We're trying to define a list of encounters that would count for the metrics. I mean, I thought all CPT, but I may be wrong.
So just as a reminder, this is, as we were going through the measures, there was a question about, you know, who's included in the denominators. And so we tasked Zahid and Steve to kind of take a look at that, take a deep dive and see if there were codes that we could use. And this was the recommendation that they brought forward. And we did agree on it, but if there is a question now, we're certainly, you know, we can talk about it. Now's the time to talk about that.
Jennifer, this is Steve Waldron. One quick thing, though, Sasha, so on our last call, to just sort of recap real quickly, so Zahid and I thought it made sense to have simple definitions of the most common definitions. So we created those two lists, and Sasha brought up the issue of specialty EMRs. They may have certain things like they're supposedly focused on procedures that they would not be able to have encounters in those lists. So her recommendation was to actually make them very expansive or to make exclusionary lists as opposed to inclusionary lists. And we ran out of time to kind of get a group to kind of get a firm definition of if we wanted to go that way. And so Zahid and I have not had a chance to go in and find any value sets that we would recommend if we want to go with the more expansive definition of encounter.
So at this time, Steve, if I'm understanding correctly, because you were coming in and out there, you and Zahid haven't had a chance to talk about a definitive definition. And so right now we don't have, so this recommendation isn't really what we're saying. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So then, and there was discussion at the last meeting that there wasn't consensus yet on that we should have a different definition.
Okay. So I think right now we just need to note, it sounds like, and tell me if I'm misunderstanding, that it the recommendation is that it needs to be defined. But right now, we do not have a definition to recommend. Is that correct?
I believe that to be correct.
Okay. All right. We'll note that. And then, Steve, if you and Zahid get together this week, let us know, because we will be reviewing some outstanding items next week. But that's our last week that we're going to be able to make any changes to the slide deck. So if you do touch base and you have a recommendation, please bring that forward to us so we can include it. All right, next slide. All right, these are our recommendations for the patient access group of measures, and this one specifically is for the measure of the use of different methods for access to electronic health information. And again, I'll just give you a few seconds to review that. And these were the agreed upon items that we pulled over from the Google Doc.
So in the section on provider-facing apps, we talked about at least attempting, if possible, to aggregate by product, but knowing that sometimes that wasn't going to make sense. And I guess maybe we captured this. I think what I would just include, aggregate by product where possible, would be the one bit of text I would add.
Okay. Any other comments around that piece? Everybody okay with adding that?
I can agree.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, are we using the hand raise or?
That's helpful, but if you have a burning thing, feel free, if no one's talking, to just talk.
Yeah, hey, it's Jim.
Thank you. If you wanted to identify yourself too, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, hey, Jim Gerges here. One of the things we've been chatting about as we see this is bullet number two, an active patient being one that had an encounter within the reporting period. And the only question we had was, if over time we are thinking that the models of care will shift to substitution of online encounters through some of these apps for physical encounters, there may be, in value-based care projects, incredibly valuable uses of these assets, these apps that will be missed by making the denominator just be a patient who's had an actual encounter. Right. And so one question was, don't we want to also measure, you know, patient use of apps when we've successfully avoided encounters? Would we accidentally leave off insights into that valuable substitution in the new future?
Yeah, I think not specifically to this active encounter, but some of the other measures, there was conversation around, we can't measure what we can't capture. And so if there's if there's an encounter that's not happening because it was a good thing that we kept them out of the office, there'd be no way to capture that.
You could, because if you had, for example, an app, you know, if it's the EHR reporting program, then if I have a diabetes or wellness app or something where patients just check in their weight, blood pressure, et cetera, and they log on, why wouldn't the FHIR interface be able to understand that a user who did not have an encounter during that period actually logged on? Why would we not know that? Like if we found that the percentage of use of these apps was going up, you'd know that somebody used the app outside of the denominator, and you could capture that, I would think, fairly easily, at least on the number of accessed encounters that occurred for patients that did not have an encounter in the reporting period.
Fred just made a comment that we will know that they're in the numerator. Fred, would you like to elaborate on that?
Hold on one second. Yeah, I was just saying, because we are separately collecting the numerator and denominator information, so technically the numerator would capture individuals with and without an encounter, and the denominator is just there to kind of standardize the measure across different products for developers. So we would have that information captured in the actual numerator of this measure.
Yeah, so I would suggest, like, there was a metric that said, you know, percentage of logons to apps for patients who, you know, what percentage of all logins have patients who had an encounter during a certain time frame versus not? Because that might be an important insight for ONC as value-based care arrangements create substitution. And a measure like that would at least capture, is there acceleration of app use outside of encounters?
That's a good suggestion. I think we can incorporate that within the recommendations.
Is the denominator traditional encounters and the numerator is online or app-based encounters?
I'm thinking that the denominator is total number of app sessions, and then the numerator would be, you know, percent done on patients who had at least one encounter versus not, or you know, the denominator just flips to, you know, to total number of app sessions. The numerator is where we distinguish between the two.
Yeah, this is Bryant. I just want to point out that from a public health standpoint, we've had, and maybe our provider friends can comment on this, the denominators have been inflated by people seeking vaccine care with a, you know, a provider that they don't normally work with because they had the vaccine. Do they become a permanent part of the denominator, or do they get phased out as they go back to their normal provider? I'm curious if we're going to have, skewed ratios.
I think that's okay. It's Jim Georges again, because if we just said for the reporting period, how many app uses did we have encounters, right? Then if I were ONC, I'd want to know, hey, it used to be, you know, 5-1. Now it's 10 app uses per encounter. Now 11. And you're right, there'll be detail into what's driving it. But knowing that patients are increasingly using these apps, even outside of encounters, was valuable.
And I want to read that Steve Waldron put into the chat, since our reporting period is one a year, I would say today and the near future there would be an encounter for those using digital apps. In the future, this may not always be the case. And then he says they would phase out for the next reporting period unless they have another encounter. Jim Jarvis says, Stephen, agree, and also think that true risk shifting will encourage us to not have people have to come in for early yearly encounters. Okay. So then are we okay then here? This is the bullet two. An active patient is one that has had an encounter within the reporting period.
For that measure, yes. I'm just suggesting an additional measure that gives us some insight into, you know, are people using apps who've not had an encounter? That's all I'm suggesting.
Okay. Yeah. Let's make a note of that. And then there are some recommendations that we are going to look at for future. So let's see what's on that and see if we can add it there. Okay. Let's go to the next slide. And this is recommendations for patient access, use of third-party patient-facing apps. And again, this was pulled from our agreed-upon recommendations into the slide deck.
It looks good.
Okay. All right, next slide. And again, we're still on patient access measure, and this is the measure collection of app privacy policy, and we recommended to remove this measure.
What is the other mechanism by which ONC will determine that people are doing this?
Can anyone comment on that? I don't have that information.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, my question was, if we're removing this measure seems to me to be about are EHR, so providers or whatever, good at ensuring that that apps actually have a privacy policy, right? And I'm just wondering, I think that I was delighted to see that because it seems like it's helping us get insight that people are actually doing some level of appropriate vetting, right? And if we're going to remove this measure, what other lever is going to give ONC that information?
I'm personally not aware of one. I can look into
Karen, Karen, can we maybe pull this section from the Google Docs and see what note is there that might give us some insight of how we reached this decision?
This is Muldrin. If I remember, it was kind of twofold. So one, thinking about kind of our complexity tokens, but more importantly, that since certified EHR tech can't hinder connection of these other applications underneath the information blocking unless there's a security risk to the individual EHR itself, the assumption was that not many EMRs are going to go out and seek out and make sure that they actually do have a policy. And if they do, it's going to be attestation by the app vendor itself. So knowing kind of what's in there and the appropriateness of that would not be there as well. So it just seemed like that was not an appropriate use of our complexity tokens, and that the other two measures inside this subcategory were much more important. Therefore, it would be removed.
Thanks, Steve. That's helpful because we don't have that note on the Google Doc. So, Kathy, you can go back to the slides. And comments in the slide, someone said there's nothing that currently exists. And then Jim noted, I would want to make sure there is a process. Maybe this is part of SAFER and or should be addressed in SAFER.
Yeah, hey, it's Jim. Just a comment real quick there. We're aware. We're working like there's a One Record is one of these apps, right? And they made us aware that like Geisinger or a few other places had put in place an information blocking exception driven checklist. And it was as simple as, does the app have a privacy policy? Does it even have, whatever. And that seemed like a safe usage of this. And it wouldn't be in violation of information blocking. In fact, it would be protected by, if someone doesn't have a privacy policy, that ought to be a worry for a provider that privacy or safety exception might not be in place, right? And I'm just saying that to the other levers part, I wonder if a tool like SAFER that is now required every year where you're doing a self-assessment, whether that's where we do the safe, responsible use of an EHR now includes also these apps, and is there a process in making sure that those apps are vetted to the extent that the exceptions allow. That's all I meant. That may be the alternative.
Thanks, Jim. All right, with that additional information, are we okay with still removing this measure and we can move forward, or do we need to?
With the sentiment that the reporting program isn't the right place to do this.
Okay. All right. Let's add that language then. Thank you, Steve. I think that was you, Steve.
Stephen Lee.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Jim just said I would have a comment, be that ONC deal with this in another manner like SAFER. Okay. Great. Thank you, Jim. Okay. Next slide. All right, so we're moving on to the public health set of measures. And just as a reminder, there was a section that was under the topics of recommendations for further discussion. They're not in the slide deck right now because we're going to have a guest speaker, and then we will talk about those afterwards. So these are just presenting what we agreed upon. And so the slide deck, health information, and Kathy, we're going to stay on the slide deck, thanks. So sending vaccine data to IIS, so I'll give you a chance to look through this.
On the second bullet, I just come up with a wording other than the use of the word who's, because the vaccine administration is not a who. It should be something more like the information from which was. But
thank you. Good catch. Good catch. Thanks. All right, any comments? Can we move on to the next slide? All right.
Yeah, just I previously noted that not all registries are state-based. There'd be territories and tribal registries that thought I had made the comment.
Yeah, that's what the third bullet's about. Or at least
but
on
it only said...
On a prior slide. Sorry, it was on a prior slide.
Yes, go back a slide. One slide, please.
I had made the change to reflect that it's not just states. And it looks like that didn't...
Yeah, you see that bullet, Brian? Stratified by registry submitted to avoid the complexity of attempting to stratify by state. Does that capture it?
Well... the outcome is fine. It's just the reasoning is that it's not just states.
Okay. Do you want to recommend?
It doesn't change the outcome. I'm just trying to make sure that the explanation isn't exactly correct, but the outcome is fine.
Okay. Do you want to recommend another way of wording it? We're happy to implement that or integrate that into the statement.
Maybe I'll ask our ERA friends if there's a better terminology when they're speaking rather than state by jurisdiction or by.
We can certainly add that, attempting to stratify by state or jurisdiction, if that makes it more clear.
Yeah. And this is Mary Beth with ERA, and I'd agree with that. And I check it what Brian said, that the outcome is fine, but just clarifying that not stratifying by state or jurisdiction, I think, sounds a little bit more inclusive for those non-state IS out there.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for that addition. All right. Next slide. All right, again, we're still in the public health information exchange, and this is querying of IIS by healthcare providers using EHRs. All right, no comments here. All right, we'll move on to the next slide. So now we're moving on to the clinical care information exchange set of measures, and this is the measure viewing summary of care records. And there are two slides for this. So actually, yes, there's three slides. So this is one of three slides that we'll present on this topic.
Not a big deal, but you need a comma after the word received in the top line there. Or
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, grammar is a part of reviewing, so thank you for adding that.
And here again, this fourth bullet, you know, I commented on that in the first couple of slides. Perhaps we should pull these two bullets together and move them to cross-cutting.
Is this a point that would be common across all measures or just those two?
I mean, I suspect it would. You know, you'd have to think it through, but... I mean, it probably applies to the public health measures, too. Again, I mean, the issue is simply that some vendors have grown by acquisition and they just have different products that do really different things.
I'm not sure it hurts to pull it up and have it cross-cutting.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I was just speaking to the question of, is it just specific to these two or is it larger? I don't know. I don't see why it would hurt to pull it up and have it be across everything. It would only be a good thing if it can be done.
All right. Any other discussion around that? Anyone see that this is... that there is a measure that this would not be relevant to?
Well, then I agree with moving it up because it starts with when possible, so it's not possible. But...
Okay. All right, let's add this to the cross-cutting recommendations. All right, next slide, please.
Good.
All right. Next slide, please.
Well, just in the first one there, when I talked about parse and view, do you want to use the same language with integrated specifics or
yeah, I was going to say the same thing. We should use the term from the prior slide. It's parsed and integrated. Parsed, comma, integrated and viewed separately.
Okay. All right. We'll add integrated. All right, any comments on the slide? All right, let's move on to the next slide. All right, this is for our clinical care information exchange, and this is the use of third-party clinician-facing apps.
we used a different way of describing the same categorization levels in an earlier metric. I think we said less than 10, 10 plus, 100 plus. We should probably just express those similarly in the two recommendations.
Okay.
Non-value added variation is something we don't like.
All right, any other comments on this slide? All right, let's move on to the next one. This is still we're in data quality and completeness, and this is by data element percentage of data complete.
Okay, that's good.
All right, everybody good with this?
Do we need to specify types of phone numbers, I wonder? Identify that, you know, in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, it's not just a single phone number that needs to be collected for a person, but it needs to be a stratification for cell or mobile.
I sort of feel like that goes without saying when we say phone numbers plural, but we could certainly add a parenthetic statement.
People, the completeness of this could be 100% because people have their home phone number or work phone number and cell phone, which is the most critical for identification of demographics, might not be collected.
This is Walter. I mean, I think that goes to point two. Sorry, it goes to point two, which an individual data element is not all that meaningful. It's like, what is it for? And you talked about there that if it's about patient matching, then as you mentioned, that mobile number is the most important.
Yeah. So maybe we specifically call out in sub dot number three, especially mobile number. And I don't think it should be future prioritization. I think it should be prioritized now. We have research evidence to show that it's the most useful thing for identifying an individual.
All right, everyone in agreement with adding mobile, work, or home numbers?
Sounds good.
And Shali just said the data elements such as mother's maiden name were deemed relevant for patient matching and also for health equity. Thank you, Shali.
Mother's maiden name sounds like such a quaint concept these days.
That's right.
Again, when our guest speakers come on, they may be able to shed some light on the importance of maiden names and identifying children receiving vaccines.
Yeah, thank you. And Michelle said it is used for patient matching and identification related purposes. Thank you.
Just a couple of comments on this. And I recognize that what I'm going to say is going to, I don't have a solution to it. So just from that context. Phone numbers are for some level of the population, phone numbers are shared numbers and or burner phones. And that patient population is the patient population that is actually 2 to 3 times more likely to be, COVID, whether it's COVID or whether it's almost anything, to be honest with you. So I don't know that we shouldn't do it. So I'm bringing this up from a place of not sure that I would change the recommendation. I'm trying to process that, but I also know, I just would like to acknowledge that phone numbers is not a very good use of connecting back to the patient population that's most at risk. They share phones, they use burner phones. So just wanted to know that. But nonetheless, it's still probably a very good thing to do.
Great. Thank you for that additional context. All right. Let's move to the next slide, please. And these are other considerations regarding interpretation for data quality and completeness measure.
You know, I'm just going to say another thing. A lot of the data matching issues that we're experiencing, at least from our standpoint, come from the lab, not from the provider. This continues to put more burden on the providers. When they have plenty of information, it's that when it comes back from the lab, it's not as complete. So that's just an observation, and I'm not sure it's something to think about.
All right, is there a recommendation or a change or an update or something in the wording that we need to clarify there?
I don't know, I'm thinking.
Okay, thanks, Abby.
I don't think I can disagree with this is a good idea. I think maybe in my mind it's more of there's an and, I'm not seeing the and. And the way this is framed, it suggests that the provider system will be able to solve the majority of these issues, and frankly, that's not true.
Yeah. This is Bryant. I made the last stop point there. Where I'm having conversations with the conformance group and with the public health group at HL7 work group, but to figure out if there is some type of emphasis on required, if exists, or RE that could lead to more complete data collection, and that the challenge is that in EHR provider-facing systems, if something isn't required, like truly required, then it may not be collected. And systems tend to treat RE as optional in their guidance to the data collectors. And so what happens is cell phone is an example. Not everybody has a cell phone, so it's designated as RE. And if they have it, you have to report it. But since the data collection device, that interface, end user interface that's collecting the data from the patient is not a true required, they don't ask for the cell phone number. And then it doesn't get sent to the lab, and then it doesn't get sent to public health for follow-up. So we need some better way to communicate to and instruct the end users who may be a front desk person, who may be a volunteer, who might not understand the upstream implications of not collecting certain data. So I appreciate that the labs may strip out some elements, but there's also a true data collection problem that's happening at the provider level.
Sometimes it isn't that they're not capturing it. Sometimes it's that they don't have them, kind of like what I was just saying. So there's a large portion of the population that uses burners.
Still a phone and should be collected, because in that moment in time, it's the way to contact that person. And, you know, we're over 80% of the population has cell phones, and we're only getting them for, 40 to 50% of data collected. So it's not, there's a gap.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like we've captured it there, that on that last bullet, we are making a statement that there are ramifications to that? So are you saying that there needs to be additional clarity there? Because we're making a clear comment.
I think I just was trying to explain to people who were.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But ideally, I'd like there to be a stronger recommendation, but there at the moment there is no way to represent that in the standards.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that the front desk is. That's just a larger issue. I'm just going to tell you, requiring it or not is not going to change the outcome there. But I don't know that I agree to. I mean, I don't know that there's a better solution. I'm just not sure that this will solve the issue. But why not try, I guess?
Yeah. And Jim was just cross-checking it about the burner phone, and I think we concluded that it does help, even if it's because it's that moment in time. At least they have that phone number. I think Brian said that it does help. All right. Let's go to the next slide.
I guess the only other thing I would say is I agree with everything there. The one thing that I don't see anything about is requiring the labs to process the information that we do send to them. So again, I think what I'm concerned about is the continued reinforcement at the provider level, but not the reinforcement at the lab level.
All right, can we go just back one slide real quick. I know we're at time and we need to move on to the speaker. So are you recommending adding language there to point out the lab on that?
Yeah, the same accountability of the lab that you're expecting from the providers.
And are you recommending adding that to an existing bullet, or is that a separate bullet?
I would leave that to Bryant, since this is Bryant's comment. I don't want to. I think you should have an equal. Here's what I would say. I think that there needs to be an equal bullet that is as accountable to the lab systems as it is to the provider systems, because I think that would.
Yeah.
You will get a better outcome.
Yeah, hey, it's Jim Jurgis. Just to bolster that, in public health reporting, I can tell you that we at HCA interact with 225 different labs. None of them use, for example, Boeing standards or adhere to completeness and data quality. And so it ends up driving an enormous burden on the provider to recover from that.
Yeah, but the public health can't, public health, no, and I think ONC doesn't certify LIMS, Laboratory Information Management Systems. So the only way to enforce completeness is to have the providers or the health systems that are subcontracting with the labs have those labs adhere to those standards. So it's...
I know the legislative side was rolling over in some discussions we've had with them, whether there are levers, CLIA, et cetera, that are there levers to approach it from the lab side. But you're right, it has to be the users demanding it.
Yeah. Okay, and I know we're having a robust discussion, but we really have to move on to make sure that we give our speaker enough time to talk about public health. So maybe this discussion could continue into that discussion if it's related, but let's go ahead and give her an opportunity to share. So Mary Beth and Eric, I'm going to turn it over to you, and Bryant, I don't know if you'd like to do an introduction. You're more than welcome to do that.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce my colleagues, Mary Beth and Eric, who have been working incredibly diligently over the past many years. And I think immunization registries across the country are a success story in measurement and improvements that can occur when one systematically examines and measures what's going on. So I to a certain extent, what you're about to hear from Mary Beth and Eric should be encouraging to our group, that putting a spotlight on activities leads to improvement. So without further ado, I'll let Mary Beth and Eric take over.
All right. Thanks so much, Bryant. And thank you for everybody on the task force for letting us weigh in about these EHR reporting measures. We really, really appreciate the time and the opportunity to collaborate on this. Before I get into ACT messages, I did want to just weigh in on the previous demographics discussion, because I think for Mother's Maiden Name, and I think Bryant shared this as well, it is used heavily for matching for child immunization records, and it's one of the few persistent identifiers for children. Address, phone, even last name might change over time, so those static persistent identifiers like mother's maiden name can really help in matching and deduplicating records across immunization registries. And then for phone number, I do understand that the number may change because of burner phones, and there are equity issues, absolutely, that need to be considered there, but it is also used as another factor for identifying individuals who need access to their own immunization record or vaccine credentials through a consumer-facing app. So I think it's only going to grow in importance as we move forward. So just wanted to get those two pieces on the record. And then to come back to acknowledgments and this whole idea of how do we determine the success of a submission message, this is an area where IS have spent a lot of time and put in enormous work to provide clear communication back to our partners to ensure that exchange is meaningful. And the analogy that we're fond of using across the IS community is that it's similar to hotel reservations. If you make a reservation online, you're going to expect a confirmation that comes back that says, yep, your reservation is confirmed, here's your confirmation number, or no, your visa didn't go through, so you need to resubmit. And IAS operate the same way. And in the absence of IAS sending back this ACK or this confirmation message, or in the EHR actually reading that information back, we really don't know the outcome. And that leaves a lot of room for poor data quality to creep in. So what we're interested in is creating an EHR reporting measure that really is as meaningful as possible and can give a true read on what's going on there. So if we move to the next slide, I want to just share a little bit about one of our significant strategies for improving acknowledgement messages. And that is our Measurement and Improvement Initiative. And this is a CDC-sponsored effort where ERA links in with pre-production instances of IAS systems and objectively tests IAS for their alignment with standards. This process is voluntary, but we have over 92% of IAS participating with us, and they're being measured at least quarterly, and we can literally track improvements by IAS and then provide additional technical assistance to those IAS who need some added support to really come into alignment. And we've seen amazing progress across all of our content areas, query, submission, clinical decision support, forecasting, but we've seen significant improvement around ACTS. And given the importance of acknowledgement messages, this is where ERA and most of the IAS community have really been zeroing in and focusing for the last several years. So with that, I'll hand over to Eric Larson, who's our technical lead, who will share a little bit about the data that we're seeing and the improvement that we've seen recently. So over to you, Eric.
Thanks, Mary Beth, and Bryant, too, as well as everyone else. It's a pleasure to be here. You can move to the next slide. And what I really want to do is zero in on that acknowledgement message, or as Mary Beth nicely alluded to, the confirmation message on your hotel reservation. So when we began our Measurement Improvement Initiative, we are all immunization experts, and we all had access to the immunization registry. But when we began our work as testing, we now, in essence, emulated, probably very poorly, but emulated an EHR in that we would send messages to the IIS, and then we would have to determine if they accepted the message or rejected the message. And we drew a line very clearly on accepted or rejected. And when we started back in 2016, we were able to measure at that point in time 23 IIS. But what we ran into was it took us a lot of work. There was 11 different ways that we came up with in understanding the IIS's acknowledgement message about whether they accepted or rejected the message. And it was very untenable. It was eye-opening for us to realize that everyone was following the standard, yet doing things a little bit differently about what it means to be accepted versus rejected of an HL7 message. So it was a call to action for us to get IIS to work towards a unified approach in that, yes, the HL7 standard is in place, but as we all know, there's areas of wiggle room in that, and that's what leads to that what we were calling flavors of acknowledgement messages. If you go to the next slide, what we did as a community with the ERA standards work group is develop further guidance on that HL7 message, which was deemed an acknowledgement guidance document. And we used that guidance document to align all of the IIS and really were thoughtful about how we wanted to communicate the acknowledgement message. We talked about how it was not important for us to tell EHRs what we thought about their message, but more what we wanted the acknowledgement message to be actionable for EHRs, for pharmacies, for clinicians. So try to get to the point of what action do I have to take based on this message that I received as an EHR? Do I need to resubmit it? Was it accepted? Was it rejected? Those levels. And the goal was to get to one standardized ACK message and those meanings of those key fields for all of the IIS. If we go to the next slide, we can see the tremendous progress that we've been making in this. So in 2016, we were able to measure 23 IIS with 11 different flavors. Had we brought on more IIS at that point in time, we would have had to write more ACK processors, if you will, is what we called them, so to understand the different IISs and their flavors. But we really pushed the community towards one acknowledgement message. And today we have 53 IIS, and we're using the one single acknowledgement message, understanding how we want to accept or reject a message. So we've made great progress. I think one thing that we really had to be careful with when we did this, which is why maybe a lot of people aren't even aware of this until we get in front of groups and show some of the data, is that we couldn't break existing interfaces. At the end of 2019, pre-pandemic, there were 117,000 live interfaces across the U.S. Obviously, when you upgrade an IIS, you have to be careful to make sure you're still backwards compatible to any of the existing interfaces and not break any of those. So some of this information might be new to a lot of people that all of this work has been done, and they can update their interface and read these acts very consistently across all of the IIS. Next slide, please. So that was for our testing program, but this is actually being used in production today. There is a work group, I don't know how many folks know about the HIMSS era IIP project, but it's the Immunization Integration Project, and working with both EHR vendor-focused folks, providers, and IIS to improve many different things. One of the ones that we most recently worked on was the ACK improvement project and to improve data quality. So after going through the project and learning what IIS had done, learning what's capable in an EHR, learning where a provider may want to work on something, the Tennessee Department of Health, Vanderbilt University, and Epic worked together to pilot a project to see if they could use all of this information to improve acknowledgement messages. And I think there's a link that maybe is hiding a little bit on the bottom. I think it went from white to black in our transition of slides. But there's a link there for people who want more information, a nice webinar on it, and how they were able to improve data quality in the IIS through looking at the acts. And primarily, they were focused on those rejection of records. How many records did they send to the IIS that the IIS did not accept? And as we all know, it's a two-way street, so they actually found really cool information that the IIS could improve upon and really great information that the EHR could improve upon, as well as provider capture on how to improve that. So they're continuing to do that pilot project. I think they're now actually working on it on an every Monday basis. They look at their rejection rates and improve it. So very tangible things that are in process and working. So next slide. I wanted to finally zero in on successful message. And I know this is kind of from what I've been hearing, I haven't been able to listen to all of the conversations, but, you know, how do we identify a successful message for this numerator? And inside that ACT guidance document that I talked about, there's some weeds in there. It's a really short document if people want to give it a read, 5-6 pages, if you're at the HL7 weedy level. But it more or less says that you have no errors in your acknowledgement or your confirmation message back. With a severity of E. There's different severities of errors. There's informational, warning, and error, and E being the most severe of error. And so in HL7 speak, or something you might want to put in a measure, is that a message is considered successful if either of the following are true. There's zero ERR segments. In other words, there's no errors at all. It's an absolutely pristine message. Or there's ERR segments that exist, but none of them contain the code E for ERF in ERR4, which is the severity code. So in other words, you're saying the IIS has been able to accept this data. It may warn you about some data quality issues, like a false phone number or some missing data that they'd really like, but you didn't provide. But all in all, they were able to accept it. So it's really pretty straightforward from a consumption standpoint that you're looking for essentially one letter in the acknowledgement message to say, okay, something went wrong here and we need to resubmit this message. And I think with that, the next slide is really the last slide. That's just some selected resources of stuff that I pulled together for today, if anybody is interested in reading it. And Mary Beth, I promised to turn it back over to you to see if there's anything that I may have been ambiguous about or you needed to clean up as I was going through my slides to add some more clarity. So I'll turn it back to you and then we can open it up, I think.
Great. Thank you, Eric. And I think the only piece that I'll drive home, because I know that one of the comments in the documents that are being shared was that some IIS don't send back acknowledgement messages. And we do have a small handful of IIS who have not implemented ACTS yet. Hopefully they will by the time these EHR measures go into effect. We'd like to have 100% of IIS acting consistently on that. But if the IIS doesn't send back an ACT, either because they haven't implemented them or because there's a connection issue, they just don't count. They just wouldn't be subtracted from that numerator. And so I think from the EHR perspective, if the issue is the IIS isn't sending them back, that really wouldn't affect the measure because there just wouldn't be anything to take out of that set of successful measures. So that's the only other piece that I'll drive home, but I think you covered a lot of the details, Eric. And so I'll just defer to Bryant to see if there's anything that you want to add.
Well, this is Jill. I just want to step in here. We have about 10 minutes, and I wanted Kathy to pull up from our Google Docs the section that Bryant had suggested for further discussion. And so thank you, Mary Beth and Eric, for giving us that additional information and helping us understand the technology a little bit better. And so I want to just begin. These are points that were around this topic that we weren't able to move into the recommendations. And so I want to open it up to the group to give feedback if now that we have maybe a better understanding of how these interact in the EHR, if there's agreement or if there's anything that we want to bring forward and add to our recommendations around the public health measures. And I'll start by just reading some of the comments. Okay, Vishali said, very helpful, thanks for the presentation. Stephen Lane said, what levers exist to incentivize, require IIS to manage these messages in a consistent manner? And he went on to say, is there a role for ONG to help here through some sort of IIS certification, perhaps as a component of a more comprehensive public health IIS certification program?
Yeah. Well, I think, this is Bryant. I think one thing that a takeaway that I would hope that people have is that, you know, Roman numeral triple I, not all registries send acknowledgments. I think it's a minority, and maybe Eric can give us a approximate number of registries that don't send acknowledgement messages, and it might be, you know, less than 10%.
I don't know that I've got it. I don't know that I got an exact number on that, but yeah, that would be our suspicion. Sometimes that's not always as easy as just the IIS, right, with the HIE potentially being in the middle. So sometimes there's some challenges there where you might, depending upon how you connect to the IIS, get a different outcome in some jurisdictions where you may or may not connect to the HIE. And it's not all HIE, so there's plenty that pass it back.
And I just want to keep up with the chat here. Yeah, Abby said she agrees with Stephen around the certification, and Mary Beth added, the measurement and improvement effort really functions as a validation process similar to certification. Now that IIS have more resources, they'll be able to move more quickly in implementing changes in response to the findings of M&I. And Steve says an HIE in the middle is not an excuse. Oh, keeps going, and then Mary says CDC is also folding this into their requirements, and Stephen Lane says they too need to provide consistent services. And we don't have a lot of time. We have about 6 minutes to wrap this section up, so go ahead.
And this is Mary Beth again. I was just going to add around HIEs. There is a project funded by ONC that is looking at strengthening collaboration between IIS and HIEs. And I know this issue around ACTS and needing to be, HIEs needing to also play a standardized role with passing the ACTS through came up at the SHEIC meeting last week. And so I know it's on HIE's radar screen too, that they have an important role to play in terms of standardization here. So I think that ONC project will really help us align standards on all sides, on HIEs and IIS, to really make sure we're in sync with our EHR partners as well.
Yeah. Can, before we run out of time, can you scroll up a little bit to the agreed upon? I think what those further considerations we're trying to address is a suggestion that, and now I'm not seeing it here, a suggestion that we had of making the numerator be the number of successfully sent immunization reports, which would be the number that were sent minus the number of fatal errors that came back. And as Eric represented, there's now a clear and consistent message that comes back from IAS's with that fatal error ACK. And we had put that recommendation into the previous draft, and I think it got held into this recommendations for further consideration. I'm hoping we can, now that folks understand that there is consistency, that maybe it could be elevated to be an agreed upon recommendation.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why it didn't make it into the full agreed upon recommendation was that not all systems have implemented the HL7 that's needed. So I think the timeline for that, you know, how quickly are these measures going to be required against the timeline for implementing HL7? So I'll open up that to the group for feedback.
But I think that the implementation of these HL7 messages has occurred. These are 251 messages.
Yeah, and I just wanted to verify if you're talking about implementation on the EHR side or implementation on the IIS side, because I agree with Brian on the IIS side. I think HL7 is well implemented and universally across IIS.
Yeah, these measures would be for certification for EHRs and other systems that require the certification. So they would need to be able to accept that HL7.
Yeah. So, and that is, it is part of the NIST certification that these 251 messages are capable of being transmitted to immunization registries.
I think, this is Sasha. I think we had a couple of different reservations that we were going to come back to. One was the challenge of measuring using ACK messages if that is not universally sent by the IIS and therefore doesn't necessarily reflect about the EHR. So when we interpret the measures, right, we'd have to understand how that worked. And I think we've heard two mitigations for that, one being if the measure were just removing fatal error acknowledgments, then it doesn't get affected if an IIS doesn't send an acknowledgment at all. And the other mitigation would be the increased adoption of the IIS sending of the acknowledgments. I think another concern we had with this was just sort of the overall question of where to spend complexity tokens. If we sort of add to the complexity of measuring messages sent, an additional sort of scan over all the acknowledgments to remove some, or even more complicatedly to associate each of those with the messages in the reporting, you know, we have to just prioritize as a group that that's where the complexity token should be spent to, you know, be judicious with the processing we expect from each of the health system hardware. And so I think the recommendation is actually I on the next page that we seem to be debating. So we would keep the second bullet upon in the agreed upon recommendation and then move up the definition that's proposed in bullet 1.I under further discussion, if I'm understanding correctly. And I know this is Sasha, I missed some of the earlier material in this call, I apologize, but that's my impression here.
Sasha, could you say that again now that we have it up on the screen, which ones?
Yeah, so my sense is if we feel that the risk of misinterpretation of the data is sufficiently mitigated by what we've learned, and we feel like this is where we want to spend our complexity tokens across all the measures, then we would promote bullet 1I, that we would define successful messages as total messages submitted minus acknowledgments with fatal errors, as into the agreed upon recommendation.
Yeah, I agree with that proposal, Ms. Bryant.
Okay, anyone else? Anyone doesn't agree with moving that up to recommendations? All right, let's move up I.
One minor geeky nuance.
Okay.
The word fatal error may need to be better spelled out. As you move newer into different HL7 V2 standards beyond 251, there's actually a concept of a fatal error, which may lead to some confusion for implementers in that nuance. So happy to work with the committee offline on how to maybe word that.
Yeah, so maybe not use the word fatal, but error for now.
Just something. Yep, exactly. Just so we don't mislead what it is we're referring to.
I think error is too broad, actually. I think we do need to be more specific.
Yeah.
Didn't you say that there are only certain error messages that would need to be removed?
Yeah. Exactly. It would be those with that's, I don't know how else to describe it other than those that have a severity of E, which unfortunately HL7 definition defines as the word error. So I think they just reuse the word error too much. That is how
so
we ended up describing it. We were just very in our guidance document, just very clear about when we casually use the word error versus when we specifically were talking about the severity of the error.
So
E.
Yeah. So if we put with errors and then put a parens 251 comma capital E.
I don't know how in your recommendations in at this point how specific you need to be, so forgive me I'm too deep here, but 251 I would even say severity level of E or something like that, so it's a little bit tighter link there, but again I may be too far in.
Thinking about programming these, I actually think, and this is not specific to the public health measures, but in general, the type of bullet points that we have here are likely too ambiguous to actually program off of later. So I guess maybe an overarching recommendation would be that these then be transformed into actual specifications, you know, more akin to the type of specifications we use for other reporting measures for consistent reporting implementation.
Not on the committee, but 100% agree. I'm coming from the techie world too, so any consistency is helpful.
Thanks, Eric.
Great. So, do we agree that what we have now is adequate for this document?
It's a step forward.
All right. Okay. We have 2 minutes before we have to go to public comments. Are there other bullet points, one page down, Kathy, that anyone feels like we can bring up to agreed upon?
If we have one more minute, I'm curious if Eric or Mary Beth have any awareness of the CPT versus NOMED, inpatient, outpatient, that seemed like something a bit of a challenge, and I'm not sure how that's going to be addressed quickly in time for us to get these finalized.
Yeah, and Brian, unfortunately, we don't have enough time to dig into that right now. We need to go to public comment.
Okay.
So, ONC, we're ready for public comment.
All right. Thank you, Jill. Operator, can we open the line for public comments?
Yes. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Thank you.
All right. While we're waiting to see if we have any public comments, I just want to remind everybody that we are back to our normal day to meet next week, which is Thursday, September 2nd, at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. So hope to see you all then. Operator, do we have any public comments?
No public comments at this time.
All right. Thank you. Jill?
Great. Thank you, Mike. So we have, 9 minutes. I do want to let everyone know that we have not gotten to the standards adoption and conformance measures. Ken and Jim are meeting to bring some recommendations forward and clean up that section a little bit more. So Ken and Jim, if you were able to complete that, if you're able to meet and have that in the Google Docs probably by Friday with some recommendations, and then if the task force could be sure to look at that before we meet next Thursday. And just a reminder, next Thursday is our last meeting to sign off on the slide deck before we turn it over to HITACH. And so it will be really important for us to reach consensus and agreement on what we're going to include in the slide deck as our recommendations or not. So I just want to ask it right now if there's any questions around that or any comments.
Did you say the numeric day rather than next Friday? Sorry, it's clear.
Next Thursday, and that is, correct me if I'm wrong, ONC, is it looks like September 2nd.
Okay, I just want to make sure that you don't mean next as in tomorrow.
No, we won't be meeting tomorrow. So September 2nd.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or additions to anyone? We do have I'm happy to let you go early, but I want to make sure that we've given this slide deck that we have right now thorough view. And if anyone has a comment about any bringing up any of the final public health pieces, we do have a couple minutes that we can discuss that.
One comment, this is Bryant, one comment that I had in the document, and I'm not sure it made it onto the slides, was a suggestion that if everything else being the same, that a time period of July 1 to June 30 was used across all measures, then that would eliminate any seasonal variation in vaccine utilization. Did that survive the final draft?
Yeah, I do remember seeing that, and I thought we had moved that over, but let's just take a look at that.
I mean, we had moved it over, and then it looks like it got pulled into an overarching and may have gotten lost.
Yeah, so Vashali said it ended up in cross-cutting.
But we need to still get that.
Okay. So we'll add that. Yeah, we can add that to the public health section of that recommended reporting period.
Yeah, or it can be in cross-cutting. It just needs to say that if it's a standard. I think part of the reason for the vendor getting to pick the time period is because of implementation time cuts, which I totally understand. But once there's a stable version, it might behoove to use a time period that's consistent across the country.
Agreed.
We do have a consistent agreed-upon recommendation, though. It says it should use the same reporting annual period as the other measures.
Right, but then the recommendation of July 1 to June 30th as a default got lost.
I just wanted to clarify, it's not variable in the recommendation we agreed upon.
Next slide, please. Let's just look at these public health. Can we go to the next slide, please? The public health measures. The public health measures.
We had had a previously agreed upon public health measure that got moved to cross-cutting, and when it got moved to cross-cutting, it got diluted.
Okay. We can certainly make a note.
There it is. July 1 to June 30th as a default for a 12-month reporting period. So that's there, but is it okay that there's no explanation that that's because of, preferred seasonality effects that, the outcome is fine as long as do we need to communicate the rationale? If not, then we're good.
Yeah, I think we agree that this would be cross-cutting for all measures, so it didn't matter, what any one particular set of measures, public health or patient access and or the others.
Yeah, I back to the same thing as, required versus optional. If this gets, communicated as an optionality to use July 1, if it's not communicated to the EHR vendors, the importance of the consistency, it may not be implemented as such.
All right. So I recommend that we add just a note under the public health that the July 1 to July 30 reporting period will need to be implemented, particularly for the public health measures. All right. Thank you all for your time today. And again, thank you for meeting us on a Wednesday. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we look forward to wrapping this slide deck up next Thursday. So have a great day.